Chapter 2, Prophecies Concerning Babylon. We have considered the scripture prophecies relating to Canaan, one of the sons of Ham. And we shall now turn our attention to the prophetical utterances respecting the future descendants of other sons of Ham, from whom came the Babylonians, the Assyrians, and the Egyptians. In the first place, let us look at the Babylonians, of whom it is said, "And Cush, one of the sons of Ham, begot Nimrod. He began to be a mighty one in the earth. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel and Erech and Akkad and Calne in the land of Shinar." In these cities, and especially in Babel, or Babylon as it is in the Greek, dwelt the Babylonians. These were one of the earliest peoples, and their ambition is exemplified in the building of the Tower of Babel, as recorded in the 11th chapter of Genesis. From their writings on baked clay tablets and their other works which have been discovered, it is evident that they were a notable nation in those early days. Babylon rose to its greatest eminence in the time of Nebuchadnezzar, and may be said to have been the metropolis of the then existing world. Did not this great monarch say of it, as he walked in his palace, "Is not this the great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty?" The walls of this great city are described by early historians as being 300 feet high, 80 feet broad, and 48 miles in circumference. And in the four sides of the city there were 100 brazen gates. The great luxurious palace of the king and the temple tower erected to the god of Babylon, together with the extensive gardens which he built to resemble the mountainous scenery of the land of his queen, and an artificial lake of 40 square miles made this center of the Babylonian Empire the great wonder of the world in those days. Hence she was called Babylon, the glory of the kingdoms, the beauty of the Chaldees' excellency, the golden city, the lady of kingdoms, the praise of the whole earth. Because of her great renown, the strength of her massive fortifications, and her immense treasures, she dwelt securely and said, "I shall be a lady forever. I shall not sit as a widow, neither shall I know the loss of children." And truly, so impossible it seemed from a natural point of view that any invader should ever enter within her walls and destroy her. Yet, what said the prophet Isaiah, writing some 170 years before the event actually took place, and in the face of such apparent impossibility? He said, in the spirit of prophecy, "Babylon, the glory of kingdoms, the beauty of the Chaldees' excellency, shall be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah." He foretold also the name of the conqueror, the manner of its conquest, and the principal nation concerned therein. And thus saith the Lord to his anointed one, to Cyrus, "I will loose the loins of kings, to open before him the two-leaved gates. I will break in pieces the gates of brass, and cut in sunder the bars of iron, and I will give thee the treasures of darkness, and hidden riches of secret places. I have surnamed thee, though thou hast not known me. Behold, I will stir up the Medes against them, Jeremiah also foretells the great destruction and desolation which should come upon Babylon 70 years after the time of his prediction. Out of the north there cometh up a nation against her, which shall make her land desolate, and none shall dwell therein. Therefore the wild beasts of the desert with the wild beasts of the island shall dwell there, and the owls shall dwell therein. The Lord hath raised up the spirit of the kings of the Medes, for his device is against Babylon to destroy it. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the broad walls of Babylon shall be utterly broken, and her high gates shall be burned with fire. Nothing could be more established from history than the punctual and solemn fulfillment of these terrible judgments, foretold so many years before. Though the massive walls surrounded the city and were further protected by a water-filled moat and the 100 brazen gates, while the great river Euphrates ran through the midst, and provisions for 20 years were stored therein, yet the word of the Lord by his prophets must surely be fulfilled. At the appointed time, Cyrus was raised up, and becoming the leader of the Medes and Persians, directed his efforts against Babylon. At first, he laid siege to the city, preventing the exit or entrance of its inhabitants or would-be relievers. But the king and his people still dwelt carelessly and laughed to scorn those attempts to gain the conquest. They held their accustomed feasts, and on the night of their great annual festival, Belshazzar made a great feast to 1,000 of his lords, and drank wine before 1,000, and blasphemously commanded to bring the golden and silver vessels which his father Nebuchadnezzar had taken out of the temple which was in Jerusalem, that the king and his princes, his wives and his concubines might drink therein. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and of silver, of brass, of iron, of wood, and of stone. Then, in the midst of their drunken feast, came the ominous writing upon the wall of the palace, which Daniel was brought forth to interpret, as saying, God hath numbered thy kingdom and finished it. Thou art weighed in the balances and art found wanting. Thy kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians. After 2 years of siege, Cyrus was directed by the overruling purposes of God to a new method of strategy, which also had been foretold by the prophet, although unknown to Cyrus. This was to divert the great river Euphrates from its course, so that the riverbed should become dry and allow the attacking troops to enter along it under the city walls. The river was 1/4 mile wide and 12 feet deep, but Cyrus undertook this almost impossible task, and by digging huge trenches succeeded in diverting the river. So Isaiah had prophesied, that saith to the deep, be dry, and I will dry up thy rivers. That saith of Cyrus, he is my shepherd, and shall perform all my pleasure. So on the same night, while the king and his lords were drinking and feasting, thinking that no harm could come to them, Cyrus entered with his army by means of the riverbed and surprised the secure inhabitants. In that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans slain. So also Jeremiah had predicted, I will make drunk all her princes and her wise men, and they shall sleep a perpetual sleep and not wake, saith the king, whose name is the Lord of hosts. The subsequent history of Babylon also abundantly proves the accuracy of the prophecies concerning her. The Persians soon reduced the size of her walls, so that she should not again become so impregnable a center of opposition. Later on, their king Xerxes took away the golden statue of the god Bel, said to be 40 feet in height, and appropriated the other idols of Babylon. As Isaiah had prophesied, Bel boweth down, Nebo stoopeth, their idols were upon the beasts and upon the cattle. They could not deliver the burden, but themselves are gone into captivity. So Jeremiah also takes up the prophetic lament. Babylon is taken, Bel is confounded, Merodach is broken in pieces, her idols are confounded, her images are broken in pieces. Then, when Alexander the Great took Babylon from the Persians, he thought to rebuild the city and make it the capital of the Grecian Empire, and even began to rebuild the Temple of Bel and to bring back the river to its original course through the city. But he was taken by death, although quite young, and an end was put to all these designs. We would have healed Babylon, but she is not healed. No, for every purpose of the Lord shall be performed against Babylon, to make the land of Babylon a desolation without an inhabitant. Instead, Seleucia was built as the new capital on the banks of the Tigris, about 40 miles distant, and the buildings of Babylon demolished for this purpose, so that by the time of the coming of Christ, the great city was reduced to a mere desert, and nothing was remaining but the walls. These were then used to enclose wild beasts, so that the site could be used as a hunting ground. It shall never be inhabited, neither shall it be dwelt in from generation to generation, but wild beasts of the desert shall lie there. So, to this very day, the site of ancient Babylon is reduced to a great wilderness, a home for the wild beasts and all hideous creatures. Sir Leonard Woolley writes a recent account of it in his Ur of the Chaldees. To the southwest, the flat line of the horizon is broken by a gray upstanding pinnacle. The ruins of the staged tower of the sacred city of Eridu. And to the northwest, a shadow thrown by the low sun may tell the whereabouts of the low mound of Al-Ubaid. But otherwise, nothing relieves the monotony of the vast plain over which the shimmering heat waves dance and the mirage spreads its mockery of placid waters. It seems incredible that such a wilderness should ever have been habitable for men, and yet the weathered hillocks at one's feet cover the temples and houses of a very great city. The populous city became a heap. Its very name was forgotten. In the holes of the ziggurat, temple tower, owls made their nests and jackals found a hiding place. So great is that God who has said, For the Lord of hosts hath proposed, and who shall disannul it? And his hand is stretched out, and who shall turn it back? The destruction of ancient Babylon is typical of the overthrow which awaits the great mystical Babylon. Revelation 17, verse 5.